Welcome to the Investing Tutor Podcast, the show for professionals looking to master the most up-to-date strategies needed to build wealth and provide a stable financial future. Here's your host, Dr. Hans Boateng.
Hello, Dr. Hans.
Hi, Janice. How are you?
I'm so good. And you know, it's funny. I was saying to myself, I'm like, I feel like the universe was intervening or conspiring for us to be together tonight because it has been a wild week in the market.
Ooh, truly has. I have to tell you, it just a crazy, crazy week. Definitely.
Yeah. I'm super excited to talk about what has been going on. Because I think there's just so much misinformation out there. And I know you're the person who we can trust to really break down what's happening, give us the real deal. So thank you for being here.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Janice. First and foremost, you all, there's so much happening with the stock market right now, right? And I want to just take a step back to let you know, how did we get to where we are today? So first and foremost, you know, Wall Street and hedge funds have been taking advantage of the financial system for the longest time, Janice. And what's been happening is that they take risky bets in the market. And when those bets go their way, they make a ton of money, right? And then they buy homes in the Hamptons, they fly private jets, and they have, you know, offices and, you know, penthouses and all of that when things go their way, right? But then when things do not go their way, guess what happens? Taxpayers have to come and bail them out, like 07, 08. Mm-hmm. And it's quite ridiculous that this has been allowed to happen. So then what we're seeing right now is a rebellion, a revolt against these rich Wall Street hedge funds. Like, we are saying the time is up. So then what's going on is that during the pandemic, these, in quote, smart hedge funds started identifying companies that they wanted to short. So essentially, they wanted to drive these companies to the ground. And as these companies' stock prices fall, these hedge funds make a ton of money. The way by which they do this is they go borrow the stocks of these companies, and then they go on a media tour, publish so many negative and false statements about these companies. And by false, I'm not saying that they are lying, in quotes, but then they make up whatever they want to say, right? They could say, hey, we have the internet, so we don't believe that GameStop should be in business. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a false statement because that company could, you know, re-innovate and, you know, become an e-commerce platform. But then these hedge funds target, you know, these companies, and they were expecting the stock price to dip, right? So they borrowed shares of these companies, and then they were just waiting for the price to dip. And then what? They repurchased those shares at a lower price, and then they pocket all of the profits that they make. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, these hedge funds, not only did they short 100% of the shares that are available, they hated this one company, GameStop, so much, they shorted 140% of their shares, which is unthinkable.
How's that possible?
It is not possible, in my opinion. But if you are a rich hedge fund, and if you are affiliated with Wall Street, apparently you can just do whatever you want, right? You can do whatever you want in the stock market. Once you make money, you buy more homes in the Hamptons, you fly more private jets. But if something goes wrong, then we have to come bail them out. So then they do whatever they want. But guess what? One individual, a retail investor, noticed what was going on with GameStop. And this individual felt like GameStop is a decent company. Sure, they are not perfect, but there's an opportunity for them to make it out of this pandemic. Mm-hmm. So this one retail investor decided to stand up against the rich elite Wall Street hedge funds. And what this retail investor did was he published, you know, a document stating why he believes this company GameStop is a good investment. Luckily for him, a few months later, the CEO of Chewy, which is the online, you know, pet
retailer.
The CEO of Chewy took on board seats of GameStop. And he said that, hey, I'm going to revolutionize this company. So all of a sudden, there was attention on GameStop. And, you know, everyone in the retail community noticed this. And everyone is like, we like GameStop. We like GameStop. So everyone starts to buy. Now, for Wall Street and rich hedge funds, this is the worst thing that can happen. Because when you are shorting a stock, right, you bought it. Remember, you borrowed the shares. So you don't own the shares. You borrowed it. And when you borrow the shares, you sell it at whatever price that you borrowed it at. So let's assume that they borrowed it for $100 per share. They were hoping that it was going to drop to about $10. So that, you know, when they borrowed it at $100, and let's say they sold it at $100, when it drops to $10, they can just rebuy it at $10, right? Give it back to the broker and then pocket the $90. Mm-hmm. So if they are doing that with billions of dollars, you can see how much money that they were looking to make. Now, all of these Reddit, you know, investors, retail investors who they call dumb and unsophisticated. And so they are like, what? We like GameStop. We like GameStop. So they start to buy. Now the stock doesn't go. Imagine the stock going from $100 to literally 10,000. That's pretty much where we are if you are adjusting for the growth that we've seen. So now hedge funds are panicking because no matter how high the price gets, they have to buy it back.
Ah.
There's no option. Yeah, because you borrowed it.
Yeah.
You borrowed it and you
sold it. Is there a time frame that they have to give it back by?
There is a time frame, but the problem is if you are a hedge fund and you saw the price going, so right now it's at 10,000, you bought it at 100. Are you going to sit around and wait for people to say, we like GameStop and keep buying it till it goes to 50,000?
Right.
So this is what happens. So now you have everyone saying, we like GameStop and we're going to buy it. And hedge funds are seeing the price climb. They panic. And they have to come and buy because they have to return their share. So there's an influx of demand of purchases of this stock. And anytime someone purchases, it drives their stock even higher. Uh-huh. So this is the phenomenon that we're seeing right now. And can you imagine, as the retail investor is finally, in quotes, sticking it to the man, sticking it to the rich Wall Street, you know,
yeah,
person.
It's Occupy Wall Street, like version 2.0.
Yes. As this is happening, retail brokerage firms halt and prevent the retail trader from being able to buy their shares. So there's a huge disappointment sentiment going on right now. I'm trying to wrap my head around even how to feel about what's going on. But yes, this kind of just captures you know, everything that's going on right now.
Yeah, it's really astonishing. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. And I think a lot of us are kind of learning for the first time that the quote unquote free market doesn't necessarily exist for everybody. There's still a kind of level pay to play access involved, right? Because what these guys are doing, these hedge funds, they're accredited investors. They have millions of dollars that even qualify them to be able to do these really risky trades that you as a regular investor don't even have access to. So we are automatically like at a disadvantage because we can't even access the resources to do what these guys do to get rich.
We don't. And the interesting thing is today, as retail investors are being blocked out of the trade that they wanted to make, the question is, you know, were Wall Street hedge funds blocked out from being able to profit from when the stock was going down today? I'm going to guess that that wasn't the case. It is so unfair. You know, Janice, Something that I found out, which actually is a little bit heartbreaking, is the fact that if you are a hedge fund manager, right, you can take whatever money that you have, take it to a prime broker. Think of it as a brokerage account. And whatever money that you have, they allow you to 10x that money. So you have a multiple of 10 of that money, and they allow you to be able to invest and trade with all of that. So imagine if a person has, you know, because they are typically individuals with a lot of money, imagine they come in with $10 billion and all of a sudden that grants them access to invest with $100 billion. You know, I paused for a second and I said to myself, wow, if retail investors were granted a similar opportunity to be able to 10x our money, maybe we wouldn't need to wait till 65 to retire, right? Mm. Maybe we could retire by age 35, because if everyone could just 10x the money that they need to put into the market, and if we're buying a few index funds, buying great companies like Apple, Amazon, Tesla, we would have been able to retire 10, 15 years and maybe also be able to buy a home in the Hamptons.
Right. Yeah. So you're talking about what's called margin. Is that correct?
Yes, because, okay. And I'm not saying that this margin is something that anyone can use, but then why does Wall Street have access to 10x the margin opportunity, but then the retail investor is curtailed to maybe 50% margin or something like that? It's just so unfair. The mm-hmm. playing field needs to be level so that everyone has an opportunity to be able to build wealth in a fair and honest way.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And I think that's why it's so important that we're here to talk about not just the fad of trading and trying to get rich exactly. quick, right? We're here to talk about like real wealth building. Mm. And so what we saw this week was the legal form of gambling, if you will, on the stock yes. market. Mm-hmm. And it can be very enticing for people because they see all these things on Twitter and social media saying, oh my God, I just made enough money to like pay off my house. And so everybody's like, okay, well, I'm just going to do this because who has time to invest in index funds and like safe stocks, quote unquote, and wait 30, 40 years to invest. So what do you say to people that are like caught up in the hype?
Yeah, I would say, you know, this is not the way to build long-term wealth, right? I found what happened this week to be quite entertaining. yeah, I did. You know, it's fun to watch the, you know, little guy or little gal finally stick it to the, in quote, man. But then this is not how we achieve financial freedom, right? If you look at the fact that as minorities, as millennials, right, We have a lot to lose, right? And we're behind when you look at wealth building, right? So then we have to be strategic around how we approach the stock market. What do I mean by that? I mean, if an individual was on Reddit at the very beginning, before this started happening, kudos to you, but I hope you've sold your position and you're long gone and you've pocketed the profits. But if someone is just on the sidelines watching what's going on, I would not participate. I didn't participate. And truth be told, even if I was in the Reddit group, I wouldn't have participated. And the reason why I wouldn't is this. The moment that you do something once and you get a reward, there is this, you can almost become addicted to it. Right. So I'm not even going to go start something that I don't want to continue. I'm not going to say to myself that, oh, I'm just going to do this just this one time. Right. It's not reality. So for me, I focus, Janice, on wealth building. How do we do that? Mm-hmm. I want you all to think about planting a seed. If you're going to plant a seed, right, you plant a seed and then you water it continuously. Make sure that one, you have, you know, the best seed or the best seeds that you have, right? And then you plant them in your garden and then you water it. You make sure that you keep pests away from it. And the watering of the seed essentially means that over time, you are adding more money to your investments, right? It's not just a one-time thing. And it's not a gambling sort of approach. You take a seed, you plant it into the soil, and then you water it. so that you make sure that it grows. So bringing that analogy into the investment landscape, what I mean by this is, first and foremost, if you work for a company, you start off by having that company retirement plan, right? The 401k or 403b, if you work for the government, you know, a thrift savings plan, that is the foundation. That's where you need to start. The reason why this is important is because your company typically offers what's called a matching contribution. Essentially, imagine this. If someone says to you, put money into this account and instantly I'm going to double a percentage of that amount, instantly, you don't get that opportunity anywhere on earth, okay? So that is where everyone needs to start. After you've set that account, you have it in place, then you move up to the next step. The next step is looking at investment funds. This is where we're talking about index funds, ETFs. Mm-hmm. ETFs are exchange traded funds. And you pick a couple of these funds. Okay, so that's the next step. And if you're wondering where you can hold these funds, you can hold them in an IRA or you can hold them in a brokerage account, right? Yeah. There are different options.
Okay.
After an individual has that second layer, then they graduate, or if I should say, then they can move on and begin looking at, you know, these incredible stocks of companies that you love, understand, and believe in.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent advice. And that's exactly the route that I'm taking. I see a lot of questions from folks, and I think this is obviously because of what happened today, where we saw the brokerage firms essentially stop trading, right, for certain stocks. So do you have an opinion as to how to determine which is the right brokerage that you should be using?
Yeah, you know, in all honesty, I'm going to be really paying attention to what Robinhood does over the next couple of days and over the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Reason being, you know, Robinhood did something for, let's just call it the stock market, that I don't want to ignore. And what Robinhood did was that Robinhood forced all other brokerage firms to essentially make buying shares of stock free. And that, you know, they need to be acknowledged for doing that. At the same time, today, Robinhood, in their communication, they failed to really explain why they halted trading. And that was just a massive mistake. It was a massive PR mistake on their part. In my opinion, I feel someone at the top was pulling the strings. I was listening to the CEO on CNBC a couple of hours ago, Janice, sharing that the capital requirements that they needed to allow trading to continue, they didn't have all of that money in-house. So then if they had allowed trading to continue, it could have really impacted the business in a negative way, right? Yeah. I don't want to say it would have bankrupted the business because that's not what he said. But, you know, from just listening to how he was explaining, it just seemed like, you know, the people at the top, right, that Robinhood needs to answer to, said, hey, if you're going to allow trading to continue, you essentially need to double or triple or quadruple the amount of money that you have on hand. And because of that, Robinhood had to pause trading.
Yeah.
But they didn't communicate that. They just communicated that we're going to pause investments because of volatility. Yes, it's because of volatility. But guess what? The person who is buying those shares does not understand that you have, you know, capital requirements. So then it was just a mistake on their part. And I'm going to be looking at the next couple of days. How will they fix this, right? And in the next couple of weeks, I'll be really looking at every brokerage app to make a decision as to, you know, am I going to stay with Robinhood, as you know, or am I going to eventually have to move or transfer my investments elsewhere? My hope is that I stick with them, but they just have a lot of work to do, you know, to keep me as a customer.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are feeling like that right now. And, you know, as I've gone into more digging about, like, you know, kind of who's behind the curtains with all these organizations, I found something really interesting, which is that Robinhood makes a good a portion of their money by selling order data to hedge funds. Mm. So they have a vested interest in maintaining those relationships to stay in business. And when you see that, it's like, oh, okay, so this gets deeper than just we're trying to protect consumers from losing money. This is not about us.
Denise, how do we live in a world where the rich hedge fund can get data on how the retail investor is investing, and they can front run those trades? They can buy, you know, before we do, and then make money. But then the hedge fund gets to hide and, you know, in the Hamptons and essentially discuss their trading strategy amongst themselves. It's right. So unfair. Something has to change. And I believe that the discussions that we see going on Capitol Hill will press these hedge funds to become more transparent. If you want order flow of Robinhood investors, then guess what? You have to pony up your investment, you know, purchases as well, right? I mean, the time has come where enough is enough. Like, how is this? We have to level the playing field, you know?
Yeah.
I just want to quote what my colleague Kevin at Building Bread said. You know, he said, hey, Hans, we didn't create the stock market. They did, so they can make the rules. And to his point, that's true.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's absolutely accurate. Okay. So when you see situations like this happening, what's been happening this week, would you ever advise that there's an appropriate time to get involved with this stuff? Or should we just kind of be like, let the crazies do what the crazies do and like stick to what has a proven track record of legitimate wealth building?
Yeah, you all, I received an inbox message from, you know, a client of mine, and she was like, she was panicking a bit. She was like, should I sell all my investments and then come back when the market settles? And I sent a couple of, you know, laughing emojis. And because I do not give investment advice, I told her, well, I don't plan to sell any of my investments. In actuality, I'm holding my investments. And today I made about $5,000 on just one account.
And weren't trading GameStop.
I wasn't trading GameStop. And I shared that because building wealth is a slow, steady process.
Yeah.
And in actuality, the way that you really build wealth, it seems kind of boring. I didn't do anything with any of my brokerage accounts right now. You know, the accounts which have been around. And this is just one of my accounts. It's I call it the $1 million portfolio. It's the account that I'm looking to grow to $1 million in less than 10 years. In March, I opened the account with $5,000. I added $15,000 to it, so a total contribution of about $20,000. And over time, I've managed to grow it. I think last time I checked, it's about $195,000 or so. And the goal is over the next 10 years, or in less than 10 years, be able to grow that portfolio to $1 million. Now, even with that portfolio, it's also a long-term strategy. So I just want to encourage people to realize that true investing is kind of boring. There's nothing really fancy that you're doing on a day-to-day basis. You just have to make sure you've covered these three layers of investing that we've talked about: retirement account, investment funds, which are ETFs and index funds. And if you're someone who wants to have that edge, You add in individual stocks of companies that you love, understand, and believe in. It's not companies that, you know, your friend believes in. It's companies that you believe in.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Okay, so let's talk more about individual stocks. You know, there's so much interest around that topic. And I think the first question I have for you is, does it make more sense to buy individual stocks in a retirement account, like an IRA versus a brokerage? What's the benefit of doing either or?
So there's a benefit of buying an individual, there's a benefit of buying stocks or ETFs in a Roth IRA if an individual, you know, wants to be able to take advantage of the fact that the growth of that portfolio is not going to be taxed in the future, right? So if an individual is hyper-focused on the most tax-efficient way to grow wealth, you know, the Roth IRA is the way to go. The only limitation with that is that as an individual, you're limited to a $6,000 contribution, you know, on a year-to-year basis. So at a certain point, a person is still going to reach that max that they can contribute to that IRA, which at the end of the day means that they still end up with a brokerage account, right? But if individuals wanted to identify the most tax-efficient way to go about building wealth, it would be starting with that, you know, Roth IRA, so that the growth in that account, you know, will not be taxed in the future. And the brokerage account, the growth of that account, if you focus on long-term investing, will be taxed at a rate of about 15%.
Mm-hmm. Which is the long-term capital gains tax, which is much less than what you would pay for short-term capital gains. You're basically paying whatever your tax rate is.
Exactly.
Okay. So how do we predict the next big stock, right? Everybody's like, I want to pick the next Amazon, the next Tesla before they're, you know, skyrocketing so that I can get rich. How do we do this like analysis in a way that doesn't feel like just completely blind? Like you're just trying to, you know, pick something out of a hat.
Yeah, the next big stock is right in front of you. And the reason I say that is because, Janice, most individuals think that investing is complicated and that there's this hidden stock somewhere that they don't know anything about that they need to find. Mm-hmm. And in actuality, the stocks that have made people the most money in their lifetime are stocks that you and I know. And I'm going to go through a couple of them. Microsoft, Walmart, Apple, Netflix, Tesla, Disney. So there are companies that are right in your face. I'm going to say this. I want you and all the listeners to not only be looking at the next big company, but to realize that there's this dichotomy. The companies that are doing really well, a good handful of them will continue to do well. Mm-hmm. So your strategy, and this is not investment advice, but the strategy should be, how do I take advantage of the growth in these core big players while simultaneously looking out for opportunities of companies that could be the next big players, right? So I'm going to throw out some examples. So if I was thinking about that approach and I was to pick three companies just off the top of my head, I would do in one half the core companies that will continue to grow. I personally would do Apple, Tesla, Amazon, okay? These are, like, I feel these companies, oh my gosh, phenomenal.
They're not going anywhere.
They're not going anywhere. Apple is increasing the revenue they bring in by, you know, transitioning to subscription service. you all, I don't think you even understand what's happening. If every iPhone user has to, at a certain point, pay Apple $35 a month or $50 a month, and there are hundreds of millions or billions of iPhones out there, Apple is going to be making trillions of dollars over the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Right now, Apple is just a $2 trillion company. When it's making trillions of dollars in revenue, it's not going to be a $2 trillion company. It's going right. to grow. So people don't realize that. But some individuals think, oh, Apple is too big. What does that even mean? Have they stopped growing? No, right? Second, Amazon. Last time I checked, Jeff Bezos is even trying to go to the moon, okay, with his space company.
He's run out of things to do on planet Earth.
So Amazon, Janice, to your point, incredible point. Amazon wants to do everything. A reminder of that is by taking a look at their logo. You see that A to Z, right? They literally want to be able to cover every product and every service that's possible. The next big thing that they are going after right now is healthcare. Healthcare is a $4 trillion market cap opportunity. If Amazon is able to capture some market share of that, it's going to further push their revenue. Amazon is another company that I see eventually getting to trillions of dollars in revenue over the next 10 years or so. Tesla. I'm not even going to say much about Tesla because Tesla is everything.
They speak for themselves.
Speak for themselves. So I'm not even going to talk about too much about Tesla. Everyone obviously knows that electric vehicles, you know, they are the future, right? Not only that, but guess what? At a certain point, we're going to want to power our house with solar energy. And guess what? If we're familiar with the brand that sold us the car, we're going to be comfortable with that same brand powering our home.
Yep.
And, you know, truth be told, Tesla is going to be a multi-trillion dollar company. What other company in existence can sell a software upgrade for $10,000? Please show me what company can sell a software upgrade to a consumer like you and I for $10,000 and people will pay it.
I can't think of any.
I can't think of any either. And software doesn't cost anything. It is literally just code in a computer.
Right.
So I don't think people even get it. Right now, there are about, let's assume there are 1 million cars in terms of Tesla vehicles. If they are able to sell, let's say, this $10,000 software upgrade to 1 million, you know, cars, 10,000 million cars, that roughly is about $10 billion. Elon Musk in 2014 said his goal for 2020 was to sell 500,000 cars. Everyone laughed at him. They thought he was crazy. How can you sell 500,000 cars? Who do you think you are? Guess what? In 2020, they sold 500,000 cars. Now, Elon Musk said his goal for 2030 is to sell 20 million cars per year. Guess what everyone is saying? You're crazy. How can you sell 20 million cars?
I wouldn't bet against Elon Musk. I'm just saying.
I wouldn't. And please do take that sip and I'll join you.
I would not bet against him. I know what my money's worth.
100%. So if 1 million cars having a $10,000 software upgrade is, you know, 10 billion, then 10 million cars having a software upgrade of $10,000 is going to be $100 billion. But the thing is, the software upgrade today is 10,000. 10 years from now, it could be 30,000. And they are planning to make 20 million cars per year. Janice, Tesla is going to be a money printing machine, in my opinion.
I believe it. I mean, honestly, I don't think they've literally exceeded everybody's expectations. And it's just like, why would it stop at this point? I mean, and we're not even talking about the work they're doing, again, to get to space. I mean, they've already gone to space.
Oh, my gosh.
Hello. Like, there's just nothing to say. You see it. You have to see, like, right, they say you got to see it to believe it. You're seeing it. So it is what it is. Take that information and do what you will with it. Okay, so I would love folks to, if you guys have questions, definitely pop them into the little Q&A box. We would love to answer some questions while we're here.
Denise,
yeah.
I realized that I spoke about the half, which, you know, the companies that are, you know, here and in existence. Let's look at the other half. And
yes, the up-and-comers.
The up-and-comers. I'm going to, you know, just share two companies. So first one that I'll share is, I'm trying to think through which one should you pick, which one should I pick? Okay, let's look at Airbnb. Okay, Airbnb. This one seems quite obvious to me, but most people are going to miss it because it's, once again, just like all of the other companies, it's going to be right in their face and they are not going to realize it. I mean, think about this. The company doesn't need to build any building. They don't need to build anything. Compare that with other hotel chains that literally have to build buildings. Uh-huh. And they instantly make money off of individuals literally renting or leasing their homes. And it's a business that is a global business worldwide. The company, I believe, is currently valued, I'm going to guess, around $150 billion. In my opinion, over the next 10 years, I could see Airbnb being worth about $500 billion. So over the next 10 years, my estimation is that Airbnb needs, the stock price needs to grow by 5x what it is right now.
So we're talking about like $1,000 a share.
Yes, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, I have something to ask you about Airbnb because I was part of like the group of people that was waiting for them to go public. Mm. And I was so excited. And then I saw the retail investor price for the stock and it was double what they were giving it to institutional investors. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do this right now because the traditional wisdom is like IPOs can be very volatile, wait 6 months, then get involved. And I gave myself maybe 8 weeks and I was like, you know what? This is not coming back down. And I believe in the future of Airbnb and I'm going to invest and whatever it is, what it is, because I'm not doing this for tomorrow. I'm not doing it for next month. This is like a long-term game. And I'm so glad that I did because I'm already seeing returns on my investment. But if I had listened to what everybody else is saying, you know, they were like, oh, you're going to waste your money. You have to really trust your own intuition at some point as an investor, right?
You have to. And the core thing is that what does it matter if the price drops? And what does it matter if the price goes up? That's the beauty of being a long-term investor. When the price goes up, sure, I look at it and I smile. But truthfully, I honestly don't care. And I mean, like, I really mean this. I really don't care. Why? Because like I shared with you, over the next 10 years, I'm estimating that it can grow to 5X, so a $500 billion valuation, which means the stock price at $200 per share should be at about 1,000. It doesn't mean that it gets there in a straight line. So whatever the stock does right now doesn't matter. Even if Airbnb drops down to $100, I probably will be buying more.
Right.
Because you get it. So the long-term investor shouldn't need to think or worry about getting in at the perfect time. Mm. The perfect time is when you decide that you love this company and you look at the future and you see growth. That is the time that that person needs to buy. So right. I'm so glad you didn't wait.
You just have to trust yourself at some point. And so I would encourage everybody that's listening here, like, do not take investing advice from, like, you know, your uncle or somebody like on Reddit. Like, do your research. There's nothing that's going to substitute you just being involved in the market, picking a couple stocks that you just want to study, see how they move. Like, find out who's running them. Like, do the research and it will pay off exponentially.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what's the second company, the second up and comer that you were going to tell us about?
Yes. I'm trying to think through my mind to see which company should I pick. Which company should I pick? Okay. I'm going to go with Lemonade.
Oh, yes. Love them.
Yep. So Lemonade is an insurance company. Right now, they focus on rental insurance. They focus on homeowners insurance. They launched pet insurance last year. And this year, they are looking at term life insurance. So essentially, they want to be an insurance company. But they are approaching it from an angle that is quite unique. They view it that the insurance industry is quite broken, right? Insurance companies don't want to honor policies, when there's a claim,
yeah,
right? So there's this combative relationship between the insurance company and then the person who is insured.
And there's no innovation in that industry for a very long time.
That is so true. So what Lemonade, is trying to do is they believe that, hey, if life gives you lemons, meaning that if you have a claim, right, make lemonade. It should be a great experience. So they've turned that process on its head. And the way that they are doing it is by using artificial intelligence. Huh. So literally, an individual who has a claim, they pick up their phone and then they just talk into the app and say what happens. 33% of all claims are paid within 3 seconds.
I've never heard of an insurance company that does that before.
33% of, so a third of the claims are paid instantly in 3 seconds and they wire their money to your account without even talking to you. You don't even need to talk to anyone. The 2/3 might need further clarification because maybe the event, seems, And the beauty of this is the artificial intelligence system gets better and better. So if you truly have a legitimate claim, the likelihood of being, paid is significantly high, assuming you're not trying to be dubious or anything like that.
It sounds like a good deal for consumers. So I can definitely see them being very popular.
Yes. And the money that they don't use, they allow you to select the nonprofits that you want them to donate the money to.
So they're adding the social justice aspect, which so many people want to be able to participate in companies that have a social aspect to them.
Yes. So I view Lemonade, which currently it's been a while since I checked, but Lemonade, I believe, is a $20 billion company. And the insurance industry as a whole is about $1 to $1.5 trillion industry. Once again, this company is worth only $20
billion. Got room to grow.
If the company even goes to $100 billion, that is 5x from here. If it goes to $200 billion, that is 10x from here.
Yeah.
So I view the future of Lemonade, assuming they can stay on track, they can continue to wow customers, and they have this focus on the customer the same way that Jeff Bezos had the focus on, the retail customer, like wowing them and serving them, the same way Steve Jobs wanted to do that for the retail customer. So then, yes, I see that dynamic.
That makes so much sense, Dr. Hans. And the thing that I feel like I'm noticing with the trends of the companies that you're talking about is they are definitely customer centric. Like that is part of the ethos of how they function as a company. And then there's also like this disruptor vibe, right? They're the ones that are coming out and doing something different and bucking the status quo. That is probably a good place to start when you're analyzing companies, would you say?
100%, because you want to go after the companies that realize that, you know what, the status quo needs to be changed, and it needs to be changed to wow the customer, to allow the customer to have an incredible experience. We are all used to being able to get a text on our phone that tells us that our Amazon delivery is right outside the door. Guess what? That doesn't happen, or it never used to happen with any other company. Literally none. So it's also the ability to get a package delivered guaranteed in 2 days or overnight. Amazon turned everything on its head, and the focus was on wowing the customer. So if you can identify companies that have a visionary founder and companies that are looking to really disrupt industries and companies that, you know, you look at that industry and you realize that that industry has like a large, like, you know, market size, right?
Mm-hmm. There's very few competitors.
Exactly. There's a great opportunity there for a company like that to continue to dominate in that industry.
Mm-hmm. And then by the time everybody else figures out what's going on, it's too late. And then we see that happening with Tesla and all these car companies trying to catch up with them. They're years behind that technology at this point.
Phenomenal. That is such a great point.
All right, let's get some questions in here. So how do you know when a company is going public?
Oh, yeah. I mean, companies have to file a couple of months before they go public with the SEC. So then you just have to be someone who pays attention to business news, right? So perhaps you read CNBC or Wall Street Journal or Market Watch, or you have the Yahoo Finance app on your phone, so that when these companies file that they are going public, you're able to have that at the back of your mind, right? And when they do go public, you're able to take advantage of that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay. Next question. What advice would you give retail investors who use Robinhood? Should we drop them on principle?
It's a question I'm battling myself, you know, and I'll be making that decision over the next week or two. So what I would say is, for individuals who want to know what I decide to do, it's something that I'll post on my page. So after this live, you know, just go to The Investing Tutor and follow me. And then sometime over the next week or two, I'll, you know, be transparent with the decision that I take. What I want to do is I want to try and pay attention to how Robinhood is going to respond. What are they going to fix the distrust that they've sown in the hearts of their clients?
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to be paying attention to. One thing that I know for sure is, I was planning to buy or potentially buy Robinhood shares when they IPO. I will not be doing that. So at least I can tell you that much. Mm-hmm. But I'll be making the decision over the next week or two whether I will, you know, consider maintaining my Robinhood account or if I'm going to move it to a different broker. One last thing that I'll say, Janice, is some of the individuals that I look up to have started to talk about how, you know, they are disappointed in Robinhood, and they have started tweeting out "delete Robinhood." So it's making it really hard for me.
Yeah,
it's really hard. But I'll be really looking at this question over the next couple of days and over the next week.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, not to single them out, because, you know, a lot of the brokerage firms today had the exact, I don't even know why I have a little heart thing on my face now, but a lot of these brokerage firms did the same exact thing, right? And the reason why is because they actually operate with something called the clearinghouse that actually executes all the stuff kind of behind the scenes. And there's not as many clearinghouses as there are brokerages. So, like, they're working with several of them, and the clearinghouse decides they're not going to process these trades anymore because they're kind of built to, like, mitigate all the craziness that's going on. You guys can Google more about that. But I think it was more of a lesson in regards to, like, understanding who's really in charge when it comes to the stock market. Like, you know, there's this whole thing with Robinhood and them, like, democratizing the stock market. But we saw today that's kind of not the truth.
No, it was heartbreaking to see them falter with regards to their PR strategy in communicating what happened today. And I'll be paying very close attention to how they fix it.
Yeah. One thing I'll say too is, like, you don't have to just use one brokerage house. Like, I have four different accounts because I'm a firm believer, like, as an investor, of not putting all your eggs in one basket. I also believe that for where you are actually doing these trades and investing your money, because I mean, we could see what happened with the Lehman Brothers back in 2008. If you had all your money with them, hey, they went bankrupt. So, you know, not a good place to be. So I think it's, you know, the same way I talk about diversifying your income streams, diversify your investments and where you're holding them and all that stuff, please. Okay, let's go. We have, so one question before I pull up more on the Q&A. What is your definition of a long-term investor, right? Because we always hear, like, yes, be a long-term investor. But what does that actually mean, like, from a numbers perspective?
Yeah, from a numbers perspective, for me, at least, it means that I am buying an investment and I don't have an intention to sell it. That's the true definition of a long-term investor. The only time that I sell an investment, specifically, let's say a stock, is when I no longer believe in and or support the business that is behind the company, right? So then, you know, as a long-term investor, the goal, and many people don't really know, why do we invest? So we're investing because you want to grow your capital to a certain point where your money is able to generate income and you don't need to work. So the general rule of thumb is there's this 4% rule, meaning that your money can generate roughly about 4% without you ever having to touch the original principal. So let's say you're able to grow your money long-term investing to $1 million. What that means is that that $1 million will be able to generate roughly about $40,000 per year. If you're able to grow your money to $2 million, that $2 million will be able to generate $80,000 a year. If you only have, let's say, $500,000, so $500,000, it will be able to generate about $20,000 a year. So as a long-term investor, you're saying to yourself, how can I grow my funds to X amount of dollars so that it gets to a point where it's able to throw off that 4% in recurring, you know, income, if you will.
Okay. Let's take some more questions. All right. Let's see. Thank you for doing this. I keep sharing so our people can begin our generational wealth journey. Yes. Here for it. I love that. Okay. Is it advisable and possible to mimic how the rich invest?
Absolutely. In capital letters. I want to even spell out absolutely. You know, absolutely. Let me say that one more time. Absolutely. Let me take you back to when Warren Buffett started his fund, right? If you pay attention to this fact, all of the, in quotes, stocks in his investment fund, it was public information, right? I mean, if you didn't want to own Berkshire Hathaway stock or the fund, you could go in there and see, okay, Which investments does Warren have the largest allocation to?
Right.
Perhaps he has a lot of it in Pepsi, you know, what's this card called? I believe, is it Express, the card company? He has it in, I believe, See's Candy or, well, several companies. But being able to see where he has his largest allocations and being able to, in essence, copy, you know, the strategy, right?
Right.
So I think it's something that, in my opinion, I believe everyone should be paying attention to. Who are the smart investors of our era? And I'm going to help you here because I'm sure I'm sure with the audience listening, they're like, well, who should I go follow? So the first individual is Chamath Palihapitiya. And, you know, I'd love if someone in the audience, if you know Chamath, if you can write out his name, Chamath Palihapitiya.
He's been very involved with this whole fiasco this week.
He definitely has. He's a smart individual. And I would say that if you're looking to follow, you know, someone who is smart and intelligent and understand the way that they think about the next, you know, 3 to 5 decades, Chamath is someone that you absolutely need to listen to and follow.
Yeah.
The second individual, without a doubt, would have to be Cathie Wood. Cathie Wood is the founder of ARK Invest, the most successful active ETF, and also the ETF that has brought the most returns over the past 5 years. To put that into context, last year, ARK's ETF was up about 145%. By comparison, the S&P 500 was up about 15%. And for the past 5 years, ARK has been averaging about 50% per year with an ETF. Absolutely mind-blowing.
Well, I love that the founder is a woman too. So rah-rah for that. I'm so excited.
100% agree with you. So Chamath Palihapitiya and Cathie Wood.
Awesome. All right. Let's see. How do you pay taxes on brokerage accounts as a long-term investor? Is it still 40%?
I love the question. So as a long-term investor, believe it or not, you don't pay taxes if you're a long-term investor. You only pay taxes when you sell your investment. So then if you're someone who is just holding on to your investments and buying more, you don't pay taxes. Let's say in the future, you decide to sell some, you know, positions that you have or exit some of your stocks or ETFs or index funds, then you'd be taxed 15%, assuming they leave the long-term capital gains tax at 15% in the future. I know that's debatable, but let's assume that they leave it as it is right now. Then in the future, you're going to be paying 15% of the gain of that account. So most people think that you're paying 15% on the total number. No, you're paying 15% on the gain. Right. So if you put in 10,000 and let's say it grows by 10,000, so now you have 20K, you're not paying 15% on, you know, $20,000. You're paying 15% on the gain of that account when you sell. Right. If you sell, you're not paying taxes or you're not taxed.
So I'm wondering, and this is a selfish question because this is my question, but I'm hearing rumors in the state of California that there are discussions about potentially taxing unrealized gains.
Oh.
Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't heard about it, and I doubt that is going to fly. Yeah, I'll just be honest. it is just not feasible because how do you tax something that is, in quotes, not real. And the reason I say it's not real is because that money is not in my pocket, right? So today, the account, in quotes, could be worth $1 million. And tomorrow, it could be worth let's say a year from now. And I'm using a hypothetical scenario here. So let's say you have an account that's worth $1 million. And well, let me use an example with figures that, you know, make more sense. So let's say an account is worth $10,000, right? And a year from now, it's worth $25,000. And the government comes in and says, hey, we're going to tax you on $25,000. Well, what happens if tomorrow the stock market drops by 30% and the amount is now $17,000? Mm-hmm. Would you have paid taxes on $25,000 when you don't have the money?
Yeah.
It just cannot fly. I don't see how that can be a reality, right?
Yeah.
It's like saying we're going to tax you. I can't even think about an example, you know, honestly.
And no, when I heard it, I was like, this is nuts. Like, yeah. I cannot even see, like, first off, the political support to do something like this, because we know how involved like Wall Street and politics are. That's number one.
Yeah.
But like, then that would basically disincentivize anybody from participating in the market. And then like, that's just a whole other situation that I don't think anybody wants.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I don't see how they're going to be able to get away with something like this, especially with an instrument like the stock market, where, you know, you have ebbs and flows. How do you value the investment, right? So then,
and when, just, like, when are you doing this?
Exactly.
There, you have like a yearly point. Tax assessed on the gains. Like, I just can't even.
it's not feasible. It's going to be very difficult for them to be able to roll out something like that.
Yeah. Okay. So, Dr. Hans, I know you've read over 400 books. You know all the things about investing. So what are some of the books that you recommend for beginners to learn more about this topic?
Yeah, I would say that at the very beginning, they should read a book that provides a foundation for understanding money and also investing. And that book is The Richest Man in Babylon. And for that book, just read only chapters 1 through 5. Okay. The Richest Man in Babylon, most of the value is provided in those 5 chapters.
Okay.
Besides The Richest Man in Babylon, I'll say the next book, it depends on whether a person wants to focus more on mindset or if they want to focus on actual investing. So if it is mindset and being able to change your mindset, you can go read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That's a fantastic book that's going to shift your mindset to a place which will allow you to transform your life. But if it's about actual, like, how do I analyze stocks, or how do I think about, you know, analyzing stocks, I would say One Up Wall Street is a book by Peter Lynch. And also you can try and look at other bestsellers by Peter Lynch. He allows individuals to look at stock investing in a way that is quite unique and phenomenal, in my opinion.
Excellent. All right. I'm going to be putting those on my Christmas list to send to everyone this year.
Yeah, amazing.
So before we wrap this up, Dr. Hans, I would just love for you to just leave us with one final message, motivation, inspiration for us to really make 2021 the year that we get really intentional about building wealth, because it's so important and we need to start. We should have started yesterday, but if you didn't start yesterday, you got to start today. So tell us, you know, what you want us to take away from this conversation.
Yeah, the most important thing that I want you to take away from this conversation is that the stock market typically has 10-year cycles. In 07, 08, when we witnessed the stock market, you know, fall by about 40, 50%. In 09 was literally the bottom, but the bottom didn't mean that the market went to zero, which is another thing I want people to understand. The stock market realistically has never gone to zero, and in my opinion, can never go to zero. So the stock market dropped about 40-50%. And then from 2009 till the end of 2019, we saw roughly about a 500% gain. And then in 2020, last year, we witnessed a pullback. It was about a 45% pullback in the stock market. Well, guess what, friends? 2021, in my opinion, is like what we witnessed in 2009. So over the next decade, we have an opportunity as we come out of this pandemic with all of the money that individuals who were able to work from home and now they are not paying student loans, they are not traveling and going on vacations, all the money that you see stuffed in your savings account, guess what happens over the next 2 to 3 years when humans are let loose? People are going to
exactly.
People are going to be spending money like crazy. Yeah. And in case if you just don't know what that means, as people spend money, that money increases the revenues of these companies that we invest in. So over the next decade, it is my belief that we're going to see significant growth in the stock market. So this 10-year bull market is everyone's opportunity. And I'm not going to wait if I were you. The next 2 to 3 months, there will be some volatility as we hear things about a different strain of the virus and, you know, us being able to vaccinate, let's say, at least half of the population or 75% of the population so we can reach herd immunity. As we work out those kinks over the next 3 to 5 months, there will be some volatility. But as soon as we meet the goals in front of us as a country, as an economy, and we start to come out and spend money, it's going to literally drive the stock market over the next decade. So if I were you, I'd be investing what I can into incredible investments that you understand, you believe in, and follow that pattern that we described. Retirement account at an employer, investment funds, so ETFs, index funds, before individual stocks, right? Mm-hmm. And if you do that, not only are you going to build a foundation upon which you're going to build generational wealth, you're going to be able to see your wealth exponentially grow over the next decade. And you're going to look back with excitement to say, you know what? I took advantage of this Wall Street instrument that I wasn't supposed to be a part of, and I used it to build generational wealth for me and my family.
I told you, y'all, you were going to have a good time here. Dr. Hans, it is always a pleasure. You are such an inspiration. And just thank you for spending this time with us and really inspiring us to think beyond what is possible. I just learned so much from you every time we connect, and I appreciate everything that you do. I know everybody enjoyed themselves here. So thank you so, so much for your time tonight.